You're listening to ABC Radio National's MP3 and podcast of The Spirit of Things. Find out more, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, I'm Rachel Kahn. Welcome to The Spirit of Things on ABC Radio National. If there are times you feel the divine presence, then you're halfway to becoming a mystic. And if you want to unite with that presence, then you're an aspiring mystic. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Meister Eckhart, a German medieval mystic who's making a comeback. This is from his writing.
When someone goes out of himself to find God or fetch God, he is wrong. I do not find God outside myself or conceive him except as my own and in me.
When the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, learned that the newly formed Meister Eckhart Society in Australia was about to hold its first international conference, he sent his congratulations to the patron, Father Tom Cassidy, saying, "For me, Eckhart has always been a model for understanding what Christian thinking really is, the giving birth of God in us, thought inseparable from silence." Today we hear a lot about the yearning for spiritual simplicity and silent contemplation. Perhaps that's why the sayings of Meister Eckhart are so alluring, but they aren't always easy to understand. In fact, he perplexed the authorities in his own day and was tried for heresy in 1326. More of that later when I speak to Father Tom Cassidy. But first, I wanted to get a sense of whether Meister Eckhart would catch on in Australia. So I spoke to someone who's got her finger on the pulse of contemporary spirituality. Dr. Marianne Confoy is a Sister of Charity, a university lecturer and president of the United Faculty of Theology in Melbourne. Sister Marianne, do you think the time of Meister Eckhart has come?
Yes, I do, as I think the time of our understanding of the mystical dimension of our own spirituality has most certainly come, and I think people are aching for it. But the reaction of people to the death of Brother Roger in Taizé just recently shows the enormous interest that people have in the world of the spirit and in their own incarnational experience of who God is and how God relates to them in their own humanity.
When you say incarnational experience, I know that some Catholic theologians will understand readily what you mean. How can you explain that to a layperson?
So often if you use the term, if you say Meister Eckhart was a man who was deeply embedded in the mystical journey, people can think, right, he's having levitations, he's having special private experiences with God. But in fact, so many Australian Christians, so many Australian people are touched by the transcendent, by God, in ways that they are aware of but not able to process and haven't been given the background understanding to see how that connects with their own identity, with their own experience of belonging to the human race, belonging to the world of creation. So Meister Eckhart's spirituality is a spirituality which connects us with the world in which we make our meaning.
Is that because he had the language to express this, that he used unusual expressions that kind of cut straight through traditions and to the experience itself?
Yes, I think he not only uses a different language, a language which is the language of the paradox. It's the language of the unexpected. And the reason I'll be going to this conference that's coming up is because I need to know more myself about who Meister Eckhart was and how Meister Eckhart can speak to me and to the communities in which I live and make meaning in my own life. That's what I'm saying.
Do you think this conference then will appeal to the general public as well as theologians like yourself?
I think it will particularly appeal to the general public because the ordinary people are thirsting for some understanding of how to make connections and how to make connections that are more readily accessible through their spirituality than through the traditional religious experiences that many of them have become bogged down in.
I guess it'll come as a surprise to some people that someone like David Tacey, who's well known here in Melbourne as an advocate of spirituality, has some predecessors way back in the 13th, 14th century.
Yeah, it would be a surprise, I guess, to some, but to those of us who know David, a dear friend, and who appreciate his writing and the gift of connectedness that that's been to the Australian community in particular, but to the Christian tradition specifically through the writings of spirituality and his own awareness of the stuff of the spirit in the ordinary shape that grace takes in our daily lives.
You mentioned the Taizé community, and that's the community in the south of France or in Burgundy, founded by Brother Roger, who was just murdered recently by some deranged person. But Taizé was well known for its ability to draw people from all sorts of Christian denominations, and in fact that was his aim, Brother Roger's aim, to be ecumenical. Do you think Meister Eckhart has that same potential?
Yes, I think he, again, it's the power of mysticism to transcend the particulars, to transcend the particulars of religious understanding and to enable people to connect with the real depths of their being, which is why sometimes they're problematic within their tradition. They're not understood because they're not, you can't openly pick their doctrine, but you're touched by their communication with the divine.
Marianne Confoy, thank you so much for being on The Spirit of Things.
Thanks. Thanks, Rachel.
Sister Dr. Marianne Confoy teaches practical theology at Jesuit Theological College in Melbourne, and she's just published Morris West, Literary Maverick. You're listening to The Return of the Mystic, Meister Eckhart on The Spirit of Things, here on ABC Radio National. It's not always up to scholars to dig up the past and remind us of its riches. Sometimes it comes to you out of left field. John Wood had that experience with Meister Eckhart and has since become his advocate and founder of the Meister Eckhart Society in Australia. I spoke to John in Queen's College at the University of Melbourne, where a conference on Meister Eckhart will be held this coming weekend from the 7th of October. John, when did the name Meister Eckhart first flash across your brain?
About 1965, Rachel. I was in Hong Kong working and my staff purchased for me a little desk calendar and there were some quotable quotes on the bottom, and one of the quotes was, "The best and utmost of attainment in life is to be still and let the voice of God act and speak within you, Meister Eckhart."
That would have appealed to someone as busy as yourself, for sure.
Yes, at that time I was running the totalisator at the Jockey Club in Hong Kong, and I had about 4,000 staff under me.
Goodness, well, what happened then?
I decided to get an education, studied the ATSC by correspondence and went to Monash University. And my first drop back in after 20 years of school, I got an economics degree.
Well, now you're in Queen's College. You actually live upstairs and tutor some of the lucky students. So how did your interest in Meister Eckhart grow?
Well, I was doing a normal Bachelor of Theology degree, and during a course on church history, the Professor Catherine Massam gave us a choice of four outstanding church writers. One of them was Meister Eckhart, and I hadn't heard of him for about 40 years. So I started to study Eckhart, Then I came across this very interesting passage about how the Eckhart Society in London was formed. And it was formed because a particular lady called Ursula Fleming had been speaking to a Buddhist monk and asked the question, can an intelligent person be a Christian? The Buddhist monk referred her to Meister Eckhart. After reading Eckhart, initially not comprehending him at all, she became a lay Dominican, and then she set up hospices throughout London, pain relief hospices based on Eckhart's theory of detachment.
Well, that theory of detachment, that notion is certainly similar. It certainly rings bells from a Buddhist perspective.
You'll find that Zen Buddhists have actually adopted Eckhart almost as a Zen exponent. Particularly, you'll find in the writings of Thomas Merton how he expounds on the relationship between Eckhart and Zen Buddhism.
That's interesting. So Thomas Merton was probably one of the ways people came to know about Meister Eckhart's thought?
Precisely, Rachel. Merton is credited with popularizing Eckhart throughout America for sure. And he did say several times that he was a great man, and many of Merton's best sermons are based on Eckhart's teachings.
Well, what is it about Meister Eckhart's teachings or his approach to being a Christian that attracts you personally?
As Ursula Fleming found, he seems to be able to give you clues of what may be the answers to the fundamental questions. He has an overwhelming view of creation and of God's... He has this beautiful word, ebullitio, that God was so full of love that he boiled over into creation. And that's how we came into being. That he has this fascinating concept of the Godhead, the God above all gods. Now, you can't talk about God, according to Eckhart. He's ineffable. But you can talk about the Trinity. You can talk about God as the Father, God as the Son, God as the Holy Ghost. These can be discussed. So the fascination for me, and why I intend to be studying, as Marion said, she's going to learn. I'm going to continue learning for the rest of my life the deep thought behind some of Eckhart's statements.
Well, what you've just said there about God being ineffable and having these emanations into the created world, but not being complete in those, that there is this Godhead beyond that is the source of it all. It sounds very Kabbalistic. It sounds very Jewish, actually.
Absolutely. And you have to really read Eckhart in context, balance one set of sayings against another. Any superficial reading of Eckhart will really leave you mystified.
You're telling me don't jump to conclusions, aren't you?
Well, for example, he says, stop trying to look for a way to God. There's no way to God. God's already here, and you can't find a way to here. He'll say that in one context, and then he'll talk about the actual reincarnation to such a degree that he says things like, the body of Christ takes you so close to God that even the angels can't tell the difference. So the fascination for me, Rachel, is that here you have a devout Christian who can be all-inclusive and include the mysticism of the Sufis, of Zen. Martin Luther was a tremendous advocate. And so it's all this magic of the diversity of the man that fascinates me.
Well, is that what you wanted, this Meister Eckhart Society in Australia, to explore?
You could say that. It almost happened without my instigation. I was in London 3 years ago attending the Eckhart Society annual convention. I met Richard Woods, who's going to be our keynote speaker, and they asked me then, would I like to set up a branch in Australia? I said yes. If you ask me what is my purpose, it would be, as an example, to help people who are searching, as Ursula was, you know, to be able to hold your intellect and your belief at the same time. The Franciscans and the Dominicans were at loggerheads. Dominicans believed in intellect. The Franciscans believed in love. Dominicans thought knowledge was tremendous. Eckhart conveys that love of knowledge is the way.
Now, you're a mature age student, and you've got a lot of things you want to achieve. What is your goal in the next 5 years, say?
Well, because of the world we live in, I want the Meister Eckhart website that I'm creating, have already created, to be a tremendous source of access to the best of his teachings and to get contributions from all of the great Eckhart scholars and devotees, you can call them devotees, into that website. Richard, it's purely to be an instrument towards bringing Eckhart both to the right word would be academic levels, and also to those with the term lay people nowadays. But he has something for everybody.
Well, I think in this upcoming conference, you've managed to bring some very fine experts on Eckhart to Australia.
Yes. Richard Woods has written a very, very good book on Eckhart. And I'm only hoping that because of the graciousness of you providing this interview, some of your listeners will come along and learn more about what we have to offer.
John, didn't the Archbishop of Canterbury also send his good wishes?
Rowan Williams has given many sermons on the teachings of Meister Eckhart, and he is the patron of the Eckhart Society in London. He has sent a letter to our patron, Father Tom Cassidy, saying that now more than ever, the necessity of reading Meister Eckhart, you know, is apparent. Very strong words that it's necessary to read Eckhart, coming from the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Well, you must feel great being able to bring this about, at least through your initial efforts with the Eckhart Society conference.
Yeah, there seems to be a flow, right? Things seem to be happening, and that is the marvellous part of just being part of that flow. I have people like Marianne and Tom around me, and now you. This is marvellous, and there's more to it than meets the eye, as you and I both well know. These things aren't just happened without some reason behind them.
Well, I wish you well, both for the Society and the conference. Thank you very much, John Wood.
Thank you, Rachel, for your courtesy, your intellect, and your friendliness.
Whoever has God truly as a companion is with him in all places, both on the streets and among people, as well as in church or in the desert or in a monastic cell. Why is this so? It is so because such a person possesses God alone, keeping their gaze fixed upon God, and thus all things become God for him or her. Such people bear God in all their deeds and in all the places they go, and it is God alone who is the author of all their deeds. If we keep our eyes fixed on God alone, then truly he must work in us, and nothing, neither the crowd nor any place, can hinder him in this. And so nothing will be able to hinder us if we desire and seek God alone and take pleasure in nothing else.
Meister Eckhart did enjoy both fame and misfortune near the end of his life. To tell more of that story, I spoke with Father Tom Cassidy, the provincial of the Dominican Order in Australia, the very order that Eckhart himself joined as a young man in the second half of the 13th century. We were speaking in Queen's College, Melbourne. Father Tom, as the provincial of the Dominican friars,
Have you been an advocate of Meister Eckhart?
I suppose my interest in Eckhart did start very early. I joined the order in 1960. That was the year of my novitiate. And novices are always avid readers, and we wanted to be perfect within the first 12 months. So we read spiritual writings till they came out our ears. And one of them was certainly Meister Eckhart. I'm sure I understood very little of what I read. But I'd have to say, looking back, I'm sure I was captivated by what I read. But it really hasn't been until more recently that I've tried to delve a bit more deeply into his writings and try to come to some understanding.
Has the reputation of Meister Eckhart changed from the time that you first entered the Dominicans to the present time?
I think it has, yes. I think several things have happened. One is that because of the greater interest in recent times in spirituality and spiritual writers, Meister Eckhart has become much better known than he was. I mean, I saw his books and started reading him when I joined the order because as a Dominican, Dominican authors were recommended to us. But I find that nowadays Meister Eckhart is better known, partly, I think, because of the interest in spirituality generally in our time, but also because people have delved into the history of Eckhart. And I'm sure when I first read him as a novice, I never knew anything about the condemnation that occurred in 1329, promulgated by the Pope after Eckhart's death. But nowadays that is better known, and that history has been investigated, in particular by our own Dominican friars.
It would have been a pretty important affair, since Meister Eckhart was himself an important Dominican, was he not?
He was. He was very highly regarded among the friars in the church at the time. Meister Eckhart was twice elected by his fellow friars as provincial. He was appointed at least two occasions by the head of the order, the master of the order as we call him, as a vicar over various houses in the order in order to reform them. And he twice lectured at the greatest university of the time, the University of Paris. He lectured there as a master of theology. And the master is the highest title that could be given to a man at that time.
So what, in fact, was the nature of the condemnation? What had he done wrong in the eyes of the Archbishop of Cologne, who I think initiated proceedings against him?
He did, Rachel, that's correct. I think to understand it, you have to know a little bit about the situation at that time in the beginning of the 14th century. There were weird ideas in circulation about God and about the relationship between God and the human person. And that made bishops generally cautious, because in those days, disagreements and strange ideas about God could cause civil disturbances. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that Eckhart was so highly regarded as a teacher, as a holy man, as a spiritual guide, as a preacher, it must have come as a great shock to him and to his fellow friars when, in fact, he was summoned by the Archbishop of Cologne in 1325, I think it was, to the Inquisition in that diocese.
But what was it about the way he conceived of God and the relationship between man and God that was so dangerous or perceived to be at the time?
The basic problem, as I understand it, is Eckhart's use of images and ideas in order to shock people, to bring home to people the intimacy that there is between God and the human person. So his images are strange, they were new. He spoke, for example, of transformation into God. He spoke of something wholly divine and uncreated in the human soul. And these ideas were unfamiliar to many people. and they caused some people to ask questions and to question the rightness of what Eckhart was saying and whether or not it could be dangerous and lead people astray. That was the thinking. It was caution. And what complicated it was that a lot of Eckhart's teaching was expressed in a new way, an unfamiliar way, and that made it very difficult to sit in judgment on it.
Did Eckhart actually preach to the masses?
Eckhart did preach to the masses, yes. He was a very popular preacher. He was especially well known among the religious sisters, the nuns of that time. He was appointed by the church and by his Dominican superiors as spiritual guide to many, many convents of religious women. And he was very much revered by them, and not only by the sisters, but also he was a popular preacher in the churches of his time.
When there were moves against him, he was already an elderly man. So what did he do? Did he defend himself?
He was called, yes, to the Inquisition in Cologne, and he defended himself very vigorously because he understood that the condemnation was unjust, that he was being called to answer for his teachings before men who really didn't understand what he was trying to say. He also felt that jealousy and envy were a part of the motives behind the calling him to the Inquisition. It's a little shameful for a Dominican to have to admit that the two main witnesses against him in Cologne and later in Avignon, when Eckhart appealed to the Pope, the two main witnesses against him were his fellow friars, but they were not representative of the friars in general. His superior in Cologne supported him, and his followers and disciples accompanied him to Avignon, where the papacy was at that time, for the second hearing before the Inquisition at Avignon in the Pope's palace.
I understand that the Archbishop of Cologne was actually Franciscan. So could this have been an inter-order rivalry?
I've heard it said that there was something of that, but Franciscans and Dominicans today get on very well, so I don't want to overemphasize that. But the Archbishop was a Franciscan, and at least two other members of the tribunal were Franciscans, though one other was a Dominican.
Do you think Meister Eckhart actually tapped into popular sentiment, or was he shocking the mass audiences that he preached to as well?
It's very hard for me to answer that question because I'm not familiar enough with the mentality of the people of Eckhart's time. But certainly his teaching did have something novel and strange about it. And that was a very apparent to the Archbishop who called him to answer for his teachings. So possibly it was the novelty that partly made him attractive and made him so popular. Here was someone expressing old beliefs in a new way.
Well, given that Meister Eckhart did intend to shock his audiences into a new awareness, is it inevitable that he would have been condemned by the church?
I don't think it was inevitable, because he did have such high standing in the church and in the Dominican order of the time. It did come as a shock to him. In fact, I think it would not be too strong to say he was outraged by it, because he felt it was unjust. And he did defend himself very vigorously, and was somewhat scathing in his remarks about the people who had condemned him or who thought he had a case to answer for.
Well, clearly the Dominicans today don't view him as a renegade. So how does the Vatican view Meister Eckhart? Have they repealed those condemnations?
The final condemnation came in 1329, as I said, shortly after Eckhart died. And it was issued, it's commonly believed, at the insistence of the Archbishop of Cologne, but The bull of condemnation was issued by the Pope at the time, John the 22nd. Now, at a recent general chapter of our Dominican friars, we have such meetings every 3 years to review the state of the order and to plan for the future. At the chapter held in 1992, a report was given to the fathers and brothers who were present of a commission which had been commissioned 12 years previously to investigate Eckhart's writings and the reasons and the circumstances of the condemnation. And the finding of that panel of experts was that Eckhart himself had never been condemned. His teaching as a whole had never been condemned. What were condemned were a small number of propositions, and this final condemnation happened at Avignon, where the manuscripts from which the propositions were drawn were not available. There were no manuscripts of Eckhart available in Avignon for the inquisitors to look at. All they had were a series of propositions that different people had objected to, and they couldn't be examined in their proper context. Now, all of that led the leader of the Dominican friars, we call him the Master of the Order, to write to the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in Rome and suggest to him that it might be appropriate to formally abrogate the condemnation that was made so many centuries ago, so that people could feel quite secure that in reading and following Eckhart's teachings, they were being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. Now, such an abrogation hasn't in fact happened, but what did happen was, and it's of some importance I think, that in 1985 the previous Holy Father, John Paul, quoted Eckhart in a public audience and quoted him approvingly. And I think we can take that as a kind of sign of his good standing in the church.
So, Father Tom, are you active in this new Eckhart Society in a way to rehabilitate his reputation for the Australian church?
I doubt really whether he needs to be rehabilitated in the Australian church. He certainly doesn't need rehabilitation among the Dominican friars and sisters. And unfortunately, I think he is little known outside the order within the Catholic Church, though interest is growing, and I would very much like to be part of the society in fostering interest in Eckhart and in his writings.
Father Tom Cassidy, thank you so much for being on The Spirit of Things.
Thank you, Rachel.
Father Tom Cassidy is the patron of the Meister Eckhart Society in Australia. You're listening to The Return of the Mystic on The Spirit of Things with me, Rachel Kahn.
The very best and noblest attainment in this life is to be silent and let God work and speak within. Therefore it is said, in the midst of silence, the secret word was spoken to me.
If you heard the Ark here on ABC Radio National last week, then you'll know that the Carmelite Library in Middle Park, Melbourne, is Australia's only public library of mysticism, with books by many mystics over the centuries, including Meister Eckhart. Father Paul Chandler is the director of the library, and I visited him there to ask him about the German mystic. Paul Chandler, welcome to The Spirit of Things.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Meister Eckhart comes down to us in the 21st century as a mystic. Would you use that term to describe him?
Yes, I would. And I think I'd call him, above all, really a great spiritual master who really invites people into spiritual experience and mystical experience themselves. You know, he not only tells us about his own experience of God, but he really invites people to explore their own experience.
When did you become acquainted with Meister Eckhart?
Oh, well, I'm not sure, actually. I suppose it's probably about 30 years ago when I was first studying theology.
Did he impress you then as a radical thinker or as someone who spoke to you very personally?
Both, I think. He's really quite a difficult thinker in many ways, quite a challenging thinker. So in that way, he's both inviting, you know, you have to struggle a bit to understand him, and also challenging. But then I think some of the things he says are just so striking and so fresh that you really just want to dig deeper into his thought.
Can you describe one of those sayings of his that strike you as powerful and fresh?
Well, there are a lot of them. A lovely one is he says, any good deed or any good thought, no matter how small it is, makes the angels and the saints in heaven rejoice with a joy beyond anything that we can imagine. But then he says, compared to the joy that God feels, it's just a speck, and that in the smallest good deed, God laughs and plays. And it's really just such a striking thought about, you know, the beauty of kindness, and also the mystery of kindness or anything good really in the world, that somehow it's connected to the great mystery of life and of the universe. I remember when I read that, I was quite awestruck.
The term paradox has been used a few times, and shocking as well. And I think of one of the things he said in a sermon, which certainly shocks me and could have shocked anyone then. He said, if I say that God is good, that is not true. God is not good. I am good. And if I say that God is wise, that is not true. I am wiser than he is. What point is he making here?
One of Eckhart's key ideas is that God is infinitely greater than anything we can think about him. And that one of the problems with religion is that we absolutize our metaphors and our struggle to say something about God. So Eckhart was part of what was already a very strong tradition in Christianity and in other spiritual traditions, that even when we say something true about God, it's more false than it is true, because there's such a huge distance between what we've managed, the little that we've managed to say, and the reality of God. So I think he's constantly challenging people to strip away their little thoughts about God and to dare to go into the world of paradox, where even the biggest thoughts about God are not big enough.
Well, a God that is so big and perhaps so transcendent, even distant, is one that can be hard to relate to. Is Eckhart urging the individual to make that leap into the mystery?
He is, but at the same time, where Eckhart is paradoxical is that he says God is utterly transcendent, and yet God is also in you. And in some way, you are the stuff of God. The life of God is in you, and that God is best found not far away, but in yourself. And in fact, he says that if you go out looking for God far away, you're certainly doing the wrong thing, because God can only be found in you and as your own. So he's trying to hold those two things together, the absolute transcendence of God and also the fact that God is closer to us than we are to ourselves.
I guess that would have put some people who believe that it was only Jesus Christ who had that experience of incarnating God, it would have put those people a bit offside, these declarations.
Eckhart spoke in radical ways. I think partly he wanted to shake up his audiences and get them thinking in new ways. So there were people who felt too shook up and who were worried about what he was saying. But generally speaking, he's really in the main line of Christianity, where people are invited to identify with Christ and to find the life of Christ in ourselves and to find the same closeness that Christ had with God in our own lives. So he's in the mainstream in that regard, but expresses it in ways that I think are actually specifically designed to give people a bit of a shake.
When you say mainstream, do you think that he's continuing the idea that Irenaeus and Athanasius said in the early church, the idea that God became man so that man could become God?
Yes, exactly. He's in that tradition of the idea of divinization, or theosis, as the Greeks say, that God has entered into our world and in Christ taken on human life so that we might share in the divine life. And I think that in Christianity over the centuries and over the millennia, there's often been a reluctance, particularly in Western Christianity, to speak plainly even about our own mystical tradition. And there's been a kind of misplaced anxiety about the magnificence, in a way, of the Christian vision of humanity and also of God and of their connection.
I think he says that we can see, certainly he can see, and I think he implies that we can see the world through God's eyes. And I think he uses the term eye of the heart.
That's right. I think one of Eckhart's teaching techniques is that he really invites people to think now in ways perhaps that they only will attain after long spiritual practice and deep spiritual experience. I think that's one of the reasons that he seemed so radical to many of his hearers. And in doing that, you know, like saying, as you've quoted, that, you know, we see with God's eyes. In fact, most of us don't. Not yet. So he's really proposing that we try to work now according to our ultimate goal. And for some people that comes very hard, I think.
Did Meister Eckhart actually propose a practical path, the way perhaps St. Ignatius devised his spiritual exercises? Was there a direct route to God that Meister Eckhart had worked out?
Not in quite the systematic way of St. Ignatius, for example, but I think Eckhart really proposes basic principles for a way of living. And, you know, one of his basic principles, for example, is humility, which means you have to know the truth about yourself and live according to that. And that means the, you know, the day-to-day truth that we often all try to avoid, but also the sort of magnificent vision of the cosmic truth, and to try to bring those things together in our own lives. And he draws his spiritual advice from these great principles, really, rather than giving a lot of regulations about how one might act from day to day or hour to hour.
Do you think Meister Eckhart is very easy to misinterpret? Have there been a lot of bolderized versions of Eckhart around, particularly, say, since the 70s?
Yes, I think that is the case, because Eckhart is really a substantial intellectual figure. In a sense, all his preaching and teaching is grounded in his philosophy, which is quite complex and also quite unusual in many ways. It draws on the Christian Neoplatonist tradition, as he inherits it from the great Dominican master, Albert the Great, and which he honed during his education at the University of Paris. So he's not just talking off the cuff. He really has, you know, highly complex philosophical ideas that he wants to communicate, which all fit together in a more or less coherent world vision. And I think to interpret him properly, it's quite a challenge to get some notion of the way his thought hangs together, rather than to take fragments from it and perhaps take them in another direction.
But of course, fragments is exactly the way he's likely to be adopted or absorbed in the Australian spiritual scene. Do you think many people would be willing to go the hard roads of trying to analyze and truly understand the great complexity of his work?
Well, I think nearly always something is better than nothing. But I think also perhaps you owe it to a great teacher to understand more rather than understand less. Eckhart really invites us and challenges us to keep learning, perhaps with him or without him. He probably wouldn't worry if it was without him. But yes, that's always a challenge to keep learning and in a way to learn how much we need to unlearn all the time and to know how little we know. I think they're also Eckhartian themes.
Do you think some of the church leaders in Australia are willing to know what they don't know? That is, how ready do you think the Australian church is to adopt some of Meister Eckhart's teachings and even attitudes?
I think the Australian churches in general have had very pragmatic and down-to-earth approaches to religion. In some ways, that suits the Australian character. But in other ways, I think we sell ourselves short a lot. I think we've been reluctant to talk about our own spiritual and mystical traditions in Christianity. And the part of the result is that people have come to think there are none. And which is certainly not true. So, yes, I think that we do need to find a sort of, a willingness, but then also a new language to speak about our own great mystical and contemplative and meditative traditions and so on in ways that can communicate to people in Australia today.
Well, it sounds like through this conference and the Eckhart Society, that's more likely to be possible than ever before.
We hope so.
Paul Chandler, thank you so much for being on The Spirit of Things.
Thank you very much for having me, Rachel.
Father Paul Chandler is the director of the Carmelite Library in Middle Park, Melbourne. Today's program was produced by me and Jeff Wood, with technical production this week by Mark Dawn. It's also available as a podcast and online at abc.net.au/religion and click The Spirit of Things. Later in the week, you can read a transcript and find conference and book details. Next week, Sister Mary Boies from Union Theological Seminary in New York wrestles with Christian legends about Jews. And speaking of legends, who can top Topol, the man who's bringing Fiddler on the Roof to Australia? He's also my guest. So don't miss next week's Spirit of Things with me, Rachel Conn.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs broadcast on more than 260 transmitters. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Live streaming on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcasts.